Welcome, trustees and folks here. We're glad to have you here. This is a meeting for the Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District. It's December 18th, 2018 at 3 o'clock. We're here in the commission conference room of Weber County. Our agenda have been published, and we'll continue with that agenda, although I think we wanted to have Bob Barrett to have the first verse of Mele Kaliki Maka, but we'll go off and we'll just kind of pause for that. Present in the room today is Don Guerra, Mike Moyal,
hello,
Mark Scritel,
Ron Wilson,
myself, Jim Harvey. We've got Paul with the CRS that's here. We're glad to welcome you back, Paul Hurst.
Thank you.
Blake is an attorney with us here. And then, of course, Roy and Watts and Kerry Zenger. So we have a full quorum. That's great. Our first item of business today will be the oath of office for Mr. Wilson and Ms. Zenger. Will you conduct that piece of business for us?
I state your name.
Ronald Wilson.
Having been appointed.
To the office of Board of Trustees.
For Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District. Solemnly swear or affirm.
Solemnly swear.
Or affirm.
Okay,
That
I will support.
Obey and defend. The Constitution of the United States. And the Constitution of the State of Utah. And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Thank you, that's wonderful. Great. Terrific. First, the next item is item number C, like Charlie, on the thing of the appointment of a new treasurer. With Gary, of course, moving out of the district and resigning, we have a vacancy for treasurers in this organization. One that would act as treasurer or trustee on this board. We've had some discussion as the executive board, but. Any comments from any of the trustees on that? Bob, you had some comments. This might be good.
Yeah, I think our newly appointed trustee, Ron Wilson, would be ideally suited for this position.
I accept that, Bob.
We have it. So is that in form of a motion?
I move that we nominate Ron Wilson as our trustee.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
I'll recognize Mr. Moyal as a second. Are there any other nominees from the trustees on board appointments? Oh, I don't hear any. Am I understanding that you'd like to make the motion that nomination cease?
Yes.
Is there a second?
I second that motion.
Okay, great. So by acclamation, let's just do a vote. All those in favor of Mr. Ron Wilson being the treasurer for the Powder Mountain Water and Sewer Improvement District Board, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? Chair recognizes that voting as unanimous. Great. For those in our audience that would like to have public comments, we ask that you state your name, your residence, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. You may do that now. None being recognized, we'll move on to item number E, like Echo. Don Guerra.
Guerra.
Yeah, that's good.
No, but I need to be out of respect. Guerra. He's asked to be on the agenda. Mr. Guerra, go ahead.
Sure. I printed out 7 of these, and I did not print out enough.
Okay.
If you want to pass them around. I had the chance to meet with Kerry and Roy last week, and I talked to some of you about our outstanding fees and payables that we owe to the district. And I was was hoping to talk through those with you guys. Okay, thank you. I've kind of partitioned the spreadsheet into four buckets, and Roy and Carrie and I spoke about it last week. And the reason I broke them into, there actually should be five buckets, because the fifth bucket that doesn't show on here is our actual usage fees. So Timberline, Sundown, all our facilities that have water bills, we've been paying those, I think, in a fairly timely manner, along with the outstanding interest and late charges to the view we've been late. The balance of these, I mean, if you go down to the bottom, just to summarize it for you guys right now, and Carrie, this might not be completely up to date, because I don't know that I've got all the December invoices in here.
You haven't got the December ones yet, no. Well, I read this out.
Yeah, the ones that you handed me in our meeting, I do have in there. So it's about 170 grand right now that Summit owes to the district for everything that's been invoiced. Like I said, I've broken this up in the budget. So what's not on here is the usage fees that have been paid. The top section is standby, or actually on the website you guys call them non-connect fees. So non-connect fees associated with phase one units. So the 154 phase one lots that we entitled, we still own, I'm going to use rough numbers here, but about 70 of those we still have title to, and we pay the 100 plus or minus dollars per month standby fees for those. So the reason that, and I'm going to, as I go through this, I'm going to just try and speak kind of bluntly and openly. I don't want to offend anyone, because you guys, especially Roy and Carrie, have been awesome to work with over the last 2 months, particularly when we're not paying our bills. So, on our side of the table, you know, the reason that we've been delaying on this, we've got an accounting group that, as there's questions on our bills, if there are questions, our MO is to they defer to people like me, and they ask us questions, and they just stand back and they stand down and paying them until those questions get answered. In the case of those initial standby fees, the biggest components, there was a lien placed, or there were liens being placed that equated to, actually I summarized it, just under $10,000 worth of additional fee because we were late and we were notified that this was going to happen. I wasn't aware of the fee that gets charged with it. I was aware that liens were probably going to be placed if we didn't pay our bills in a timely manner. So those raised questions. And then this didn't come up in our meeting, but I actually, when I was going through and trying to reconcile in preparation of this meeting, I went through and I found invoices, and I'd have two copies of invoices, one from our meeting and one that I printed out from you know, our system, and the bottom line dollars were different. And usually it would pertain to the late fee or the interest that was charged. My assumption is that you've got a system that every time you reprint the invoice, it recalculates that interest. Mm-hmm. So we've got, but it raised questions because we've got an accounting department. The invoices are exactly the same, exact same number, exact same date, but the bottom line number is different. They are dollars different. They're not huge dollars different, but it raised questions where they, again, deferred back to me until we got that. So, I mean, that's something that, I mean, if you're looking for feedback, I'd actually like to see a separate invoice for the late fees and the interest every month. You know, because, you know, when you look at an invoice number and you see different numbers, it just right away raises questions and raises red flags that, you know, RMO is just a stand down. Now, I did want to talk, and I know that Karen and Roy had reached out to the county about not placing those liens. I don't know where that stands and if those fees are going to be charged. I would, you know, if there's any way that those fees aren't going to be charged by the county, I'd request that they're not charged to us. I mean, it's about $10,000 of fee that we don't have. The $42,000 isn't in question. We're working internally to make sure that we've got systems in place that as we transfer titles, you guys are communicated clearly and accurately and timely that we no longer own those, so the bills can go to the people who bought the lot from us. But we're working through that, so I'm confident that that's going to happen. So that can be paid definitely by year's end, that top section, okay. And it's not really in dispute. Okay. None of this is in dispute, in discussion, is my hope. The second section is, the Western American Holdings sewer reserve fees. These were, this is an agreement that was entered into by the people we bought the property from, so we never entered into this agreement. That said, we obviously bought all the assets and liabilities from Western American Holdings. We've been in discussion on this one when I say discussion, trying to understand, I think that you guys are trying to understand what we're obligated to, what the actual asset was. I think we're now all on the same page. One thing that when we talked about last week, or yeah, it was last week that we met, it's not water, it's just sewer. So yes. there were 60 tap fees that Western American Holdings paid, $6,500 per tap for. My assumption is they wanted to lock in those fees and not be subject to increased fees as we move forward. So I don't know if they paid for just 30 or 60. And the reason I'm questioning that is that you've only been billing us for 30.
There was only 30 that was paid for.
Okay.
The original agreement said 60, but there was only 30.
Okay. And it did have two payments. So they paid half of whatever it was, $390,000. They paid half of that for those first 30. The agreement also says that, I mean, it stated a connection or a non-connect fee. Actually, I think that they said a reserve fee of $29.50 per tap. You guys have been charging us at your current rate, which I guess is the first question, is that nowhere in there did it say $29.50 per tap or whatever the current published fee is. So my assumption is if we're going to go back to that original agreement, then we would be subject to the $29.50, not the current rate. The bigger question, we had been paying that. Okay, you've been billing it and we've been paying it, and I don't think anyone really knew what the heck we were either billing or paying for. And I'm not saying we obviously should have. It was not a huge bill, but a pretty big component of our monthly bill. It turns out, now, I don't know that we necessarily agree with your guys' assessment that those things are geographically tied to the Sundown area, but it really doesn't matter. We see no purpose in paying or continuing to pay that reserve fee. So our assessment is when we stop paying that fee, you guys no longer had the obligation to reserve those taps for us. So that went away when we stopped paying the fee, which was a couple months ago when this first came up and we decided to stand down paying the fee. You've got every right to give that to someone else that wants those taps. I do go back to, we paid $6,500 for 30 taps. That's something that we still own, even if we're not paying the monthly fee to reserve those. So if you guys are out of sewer taps and you only have 30 left, you've got every right to take those taps that we paid for and give them to someone else. But when they pay their fees, that would come to us, because from our perspective, we own those 30 fees, those 30 taps. When I say we, that's our attorneys have looked through it, and that's what they think we paid for. The agreement is not great. you go through there and there's a lot of gray area, and you know, including, I think that you guys have taken the interpretation that they're only for the Sundown area, because it does say that it was, what, a 2006 agreement, that it was only within the limits of the district at that time. So if you take that perspective, our current property wasn't in the district, so we therefore couldn't move those taps to another area of the district, even though we have since annexed the vast majority of our property into the district. So, you know, our perspective is the past dues on that. When we stopped paying that, that's when we stopped. We no longer had the right to those taps, and we understand that, but we also don't feel as though we owe $14,123 for those tap fees, and we don't need them on a go-forward basis either. Although, we do want to reconcile the fact that we own 30 of them. We paid $6,500 for 30 of those, and to the degree that you do give those to someone else that then turns around and pays $6,500, we should be reimbursed for that, or we should be allowed to, and future tap fees, the credit for what we've already paid for. And when I say what we've already paid for, what Western American Holdings has paid for that we purchased from them. So I guess for all these, I'll give you our position, and we can talk about them one at a time if you want to, and I can answer questions, and or we can go through them all and then talk about it collectively. I know that this, I'm throwing a lot at you guys.
What's the current fee?
$6,500.
Still?
Well, that's, no, it's up. That's the impact fee. Basically, they called it the connection. That's the impact fee. The actual fee that he's paying on a monthly basis is a standby fee. So for 30 of them in that area, it is $39.68 times the 30. It's like $1,100 a month. $1,100 and some change. Yeah, it's $1,110 a month.
The original purchase was the $6,500.
Right. So.
Well, we do have an agreement too, that in case to get out of it.
Yeah.
So it was indicated in the first agreement that there had to be one in writing before us we could waive that responsibility, so we do have that.
And I do have both that agreement, and that I haven't used.
It's $1,200, $1,190.
Mm-hmm. I do have the original agreement that more than well, you know, if you guys want copies of it. Like,
yeah,
I said, it's
it.
Not a great agreement, but we've got the copy of that. So unless you want to further talk about them, let me jump to the last one because that one's pretty easy, and then I'll go to the Bobcat standby. I've gotten over it. The last one is the consulting fee. So per agreement, any consulting fees that you guys pay for that is on our behalf, we are obligated to pay for, and we don't dispute that. We understand that. What we're hoping to work out, and I don't know if this is a board issue or if it's just with, you know, your administrative team, is we want to make sure that there's accountability. We want to make sure that if we go forward and we say, hey, this is something that we want to do, that we want to look at the feasibility, master planning, whatever it ends up being, because there's lots of things that we're working with you guys on, that we are able to see a scope and a fee associated with that work before the fact, not after the fact. So right now the way it works is we get the invoice, and it's fine. We don't dispute that work was done, but we don't see it before it's actually done, and there's no accountability. Right now, like in the case of Paul, he's answering to Roy, which is the way it should be, but the invoices come directly to us. I look at them, I'm like, I have no idea how many hours Paul or his team, I'm using you as an example, and there's plenty of them. I mean, if you look at our invoices, it's attorneys, it's more than just the engineering. But, you know, and I think that's only 2 months worth of fee, $35,000 is not even close to an insignificant amount of money for us. So we'd like to implement something where, to the degree we're taking ownership of those fees, we're privy to the agreements, the proposals, you know, to the degree it's a big enough effort, we get multiple proposals. We just would like to implement that on a go-forward basis. We're not disputing the 35. We recognize that we owe that. We do want to talk, and I'll bring you guys up to speed on our cash flow situation, because, you know, I'd love to be in a position to write a check for $170,000 today, and we're just not. That's the reality of our situation. So I want to be fully transparent with if we have to talk about a payment plan or when we can pay down these debts, when and how that can happen. We'll talk about that, I guess, after we talk about each one of these components. The last section, and to me, the one that I'm probably most passionate about, because I'm going to say that I'm going to try not to be defensive about this and emotional, but the standby fees associated with our two new neighborhoods that are coming online are Bobcat Ridge, which is 48 lots, and the Overlook, which is 57 lots. Initially, the numbers were different because we were going through the preliminary planning process, and the land plans have changed. We found wetlands, all kinds of things. So the bills that have been coming have been based on 110 lots. Right now, that's actually 105. That's the least of my concerns, is that discrepancy. The bigger thing, and this is something that, you know, Mark and I have talked about with this individually with a number of you, and I actually have heard your perspective on it, and I actually understand that perspective, that if there's reserve capacity that we're asking be set aside for our future phases, I've got a strong feeling that that should be tied to final plats, not preliminary plats. But even in the case of a preliminary plat, if we come and say, you know, we're concerned that the 100 taps that are remaining are going to be used somewhere else, we are willing to pay for that. We will, you know, pay a monthly fee to reserve those. I get that, and that's something that we actually want. I'm sure most developers in the area want to be able to capture that, even if it costs them a monthly fee. The fact of the matter is, you don't have the capacity. You know, so right now you're charging us $100 a month for preliminarily platted lots. They're not even final platted, so the lots themselves don't exist. And you don't have that capacity. So we've run into, I can't continue to process my plats with the state because the state is well aware that the district doesn't have the capacity. So if you call it a reserve capacity fee, right now you're charging us for something that you don't have. That's the first argument. The second argument, I recognize that there's lots of developers, and I also know that you guys have talked about this at length and probably talked both sides of this equation. We are not special, but we are different in the sense that I think we're the only developer located within the district that has spent tens of millions of dollars investing in the infrastructure that is ultimately not yet well, in some cases have been turned over, in most cases it hasn't been, we're going to hand over to the district. So in the case of Bobcat and Overlook, I'm doing everything I can day in and day out to find $10 million worth of infrastructure dollars to build that. Now granted, that's more than just water and sewer, but I can guarantee you water and sewer is a big part of that number. We need to find those dollars, everything between those neighborhoods and your existing system, all the lift stations, all that infrastructure we paid for. We're sitting on a $35,000 bill for the consultants that have reviewed that. We're paying every dime of the fees that the district is incurring to give us that to ultimately get that capacity. Capacity still doesn't exist today, yet we're being charged $70,000 for reserved capacity that doesn't exist. You take that, the next step is you look at the reserve fees that are charged on a per unit basis, and we're charged $10 more per unit. And Mark and I have had this, I'm sorry I'm pointing to you, I don't want to put you on the spot. I've actually argued when we talked about the usage fees, back when you guys implemented new usage fees, I actually looked at that and I said, I took the position that I thought it did make sense that we paid more from a usage perspective. Yes, we're putting in our infrastructure, but our infrastructure flows through the existing infrastructure. So we're using more of the system because we're up higher. You know, so intuitively I look at it and I go, I understand that we pay a higher monthly rate that covers O&M. Standby fee does not cover O&M. There is really no reason, particularly when we're being asked to fund every dollar that goes into the ground, we fund, and then our standby fee is $10 a month per unit higher than everyone else in the district. I look at that, I mean, collectively I look at all that and I say, this doesn't seem right. I understand that I wasn't here and making these arguments when you guys made this decision, and I'm sorry, I wish I had been. I would have been just as passionate, I think, then as I am now. And the one thing, we could have had this meeting in a more timely fashion. I think there's been two monthly invoices that came through. I probably should have been in here having this conversation right away. But hopefully, I realize that you guys deciding to tie that fee to the feasibility letter instead of the will serve letter is relatively new. I mean, that's something that you guys just passed, what, at the end of the summer? It obviously impacts us, I think, probably more than anyone else. And I don't think anyone else that it is impacting has put the infrastructure in the ground, any infrastructure in the ground, like we have. So that's the one, like I said, I'm probably most passionate about, but I recognize that we need to talk about all of them. That's my...
I think on the
just go ahead just a second.
Yeah.
Any other in your with your presentation? Do you have any other comments with your presentation?
Not right now. I'm sure as we go through the conversation.
Then respect the process, we've listened to your presentation, and we'll now we'd like to have discussion with amongst the trustees and from Roy. Thank you, Roy. Sure. Go ahead.
Well, I think with the standby fee as it relates to a feasibility letter, that was something that we implemented. Because the county's process to start with, I'm not sure how we ever arrived at a feasibility letter in the past anyway, but that is something that was driven by the county process.
May I speak to that?
Yeah.
Except for Mr. Barron, I believe I'm one of the older senior members on this board now. This was a very passionate topic by Mr. Morrow, who absolutely of this board demanded that he have will serve letters or a service. And the reason for that, it was because he was trying to secure additional, I believe it was out of country funding. And so, thank you. So to me, I felt as it just isolated as myself as only a single trustee, but I felt tremendous pressure that we needed to move forward to help make sure that that organization who was potentially going to develop that area, we could do hopefully what we said we were going to do and offer them offer them in writing that communication in writing. That wasn't something that this board or this trustees at the time came up with, created, or imagined. It was asked of us rather strongly, and I believe at the time we acquiesced and did that based on their promise that they would, they meaning the developer, would take care of whatever they needed to. That was my memory. Any other, I'm hearing some, are you wanting to comment, Trustee Barron?
Well, there was a will serve letter for phase two for 313 ERCs that was predicated on an assertion that it was needed for financing. And as long as it was commensurate and consistent with the development agreement, that everything would be fine and dandy. So Bobcat and Overlook are part and parcel of that 313 will serve letter. And then subsequent to that is when this feasibility concept has become an interposed step, and there's a lot of moving parts here as it relates to this feasibility letter and the need to plat lots in order to sell them and obtain source capacity demonstrations. All those things are pertinent and germane. I hear what Don's hearing as it relates to the lack of source in these unplatted lots, but if you look at the district as a whole, there's a lack of source, if you will, in virtually the whole district, except for that covered by the Hidden Lake output. So, you know, we're getting into a paper exercise, if you will, in terms of identifying ERCs that are covered with source. And I'm not sure how we springboard into the validity of these non-connects. And I would defer to Roy, actually, and Blake Hamilton to help us understand that.
Are you able to speak to that, Mr. Watts?
No, I don't know. I'm just not thinking about it.
So, I mean, under law, a special service district can charge a standby fee. Can charge a standby fee for any property because they receive tangible benefits, even though they're not connected to the system because of the presence of the water system and the sewer system. And so, there's a property of Bunsman opinion, advisory opinion 101, that we have specifically reviewed and studied and helping us craft the standby fees. My understanding is the reason why the standby fees were tied to the feasibility letter was because part of what the opinion of the property of Bunsman is and under law is that we have to charge this fee in a fair way, that we have to charge it at the same time for the same time with everyone, unless we make specific findings of fact why we're charging a different fee and why we're charging it at a different time for individuals. And so and that creates a situation where you start to become arbitrary and it can be challenged. And so we've tied it to the feasibility because it made the most sense with respect to the district, because at the will serve, when we were issuing the will serve letter, at that point you're ready to pay your impact fee and move forward with the development. So when are you going to charge the standby fee and actually charge a standby fee if you're not going to charge it when you issue the feasibility letter?
Okay. One more. Okay, did that answer your questions, Bob?
I don't know.
The law says that we have to charge the fee and it has to be imposed fairly on all similarly situated properties and should be reasonably related to the cost of the provided services or benefit. And if we're going to continue to develop the system, we have to be able to do that.
Is there in any way linked to the presence or absence of source capacity? Or is that just merely a follow-on from obtaining platting, platting requirements?
There's no link to... No link to source capacity.
Mr. Guerrera.
Couple things that were, first the comment about the feasibility and our requests and Greg Morrow being in here. Your recollection, from what I've heard, I wasn't here at the time, is spot on. You know, we had requested that for whatever reason, and I think that the question was raised at that time of, you know, is there going to be a financial impact? I think that was prior to you guys actually imposing it at the feasibility. But we agreed that we at one time had asked that so that we could, I think the reason for it, he had his, there was the funding issue, but relative to the county process, it's good having the feasibility letter. I like the feasibility letter because it lets us check the box with the county so we can start the preliminary plat process, right? It doesn't really obligate you guys. It doesn't say that you are committing to serve us. Like a will serve letter, you obviously are committing to serve us. Now, the 313 that Bob mentioned, that will serve letter, it was a will serve letter, but it wasn't really binding. There were so many things, so many caveats in that will serve letter. The county has since looked at it and said, listen, this doesn't really bind anyone. It doesn't do what a will serve letter is supposed to do. A will serve letter is supposed to say there is capacity. There's capacity, it's reserved for this subdivision, and it's gonna be there when they need it, right? So that's, and to me, that's what I'm used to paying non-connect. So non-connect fees, to answer that question, you know, we're gonna be final platting lots that are not going to be built on potentially for a year or two. You know, I mean, we've got that, you know, we've got that right now. Our phase one lots, which were platted year ago, you know, 2 years ago probably, we're paying non-connect fees on half of those still. So we understand that we are obligated to pay those non-connect fees, and we're willing to do that. It's just when right now we're dead in the water because we can't do what those will serve letters are supposed to do. The will serve letter, from our perspective, the will serve letters are supposed to say, hey, we've got capacity so we can move forward in the process. Rest assured, state, we've got the capacity to serve this thing, and we can't do that right now. You know, so we're being charged $70,000 and we're dead in the water, and we're gonna continue to be charged this based on the current, and I, you know, not on top of that, we're paying for the infrastructure and the consultants and everything else associated with trying to get that capacity. So the 313, the one thing I wanted to bring up is that 313 will serve letter is almost like it doesn't exist anymore. The county has basically thrown it out. We've got the 154, mm-hmm. and the 154, there is some challenge. You know, if you look at the 154 is our platted lots. When you take into account the fact that right now the district doesn't have another source of water other than Hidden Lake Well Number 1, you look at it and say, we're over capacity. The reality is that the firm yield of Hidden Lake Well Number 1 really gets us up to about 215. So if you look at what is connected, or actually what's, I guess, set aside for our phase one platted lots, the existing connections, we're pretty close to being covered. We're definitely covered when you look at connections. When you look at connections out of our 154, what do we have? 10 that are actually connected. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's one of the reasons the state is kind of looking the other way. One, we've only got one source. We're supposed to have two sources. And two, on paper, we're oversubscribed right now. Now, that could all change based on some of the things that we're working with you guys to hopefully implement. But I just wanted to bring up that the 313, it's like that will serve doesn't even exist as far as the county and I think the state are concerned.
Trustees, any other comments? You know, where we take this next are several things. I have a few more comments regarding that. Yeah. Is it, trustees, do you want to take action on this? It's not calendared as an actionable item. And so is this just a hearing then, Blake? Do we hear it, or can we take action if it wasn't?
It's on there.
It's only, it's thank you, Carrie.
It's, one.
It's on there.
Under Roy's report.
Very good. It is under there. Thank you. Thank you very much. So it is. Is there any more discussion for Mr. Guerrera before we move on and have an engineering report by Paul Hurst?
Just had a quick question. So the timing is a problem, mostly with the feasibility letter, getting to will serve, and of course now we have infrastructure problems. How do you get there faster? I mean, it seems like from feasibility to will serve, I know we're sitting waiting for the well to possibly be the second source, and I guess in our minds, is with the process, you could go pretty quick from feasibility to will serve if things all fell into place, and that's what's anticipated, I guess.
I mean, in the current situation, only because we're going through the reduction from 800 gallons per day to 400, we're trying to prove up to the state that with Hidden Lake Well Number 1, you know, we've already got more than enough capacity. On top of that, Kobe has already drilled. On top of that, Bloomington has already drilled. So, I mean, in short order, within a year, we're going to have three sources of water on the mountain. And I think that they recognize that. Once all this is behind us, once all these wells are drilled and there's more than enough water out there, I mean, I would propose that the initial step is the feasibility letter to allow us a preliminary planning process. And really all that letter says is it's feasible. Yeah, we could see a path where this neighborhood could get water. You know, and it's, I mean, that bar is probably going to be pretty low, because even if we were off in the very perimeter of our development and we said, hey, we want to spend $10 million to get water out there, that's feasible if we had $10 million. So I think the bar for feasibility is really low. When it gets to will serve, that's, I mean, from my perspective, that's when we're coming in with a final plat. Because the other question I would have is that the fee is tied to a property. These properties don't exist. So right now, fees are being applied to fictitious lots. The lots aren't there. There's no legal entity that constitutes what is being charged to. So in itself, I look at it and go, that's odd. You know, once there's a final plat in process or a final plat recorded, then there is an entity that those fees get applied to. So to answer your question, I think it could be short order if it weren't for all the underlying things that we're trying to work with you guys and get through the state in normal circumstances. You know, we would have the preliminary plat. 3 weeks later, we would have been in for final plat. You know,
so in the future, I guess what I'm saying is, or seeing is that this situation probably won't exist. You could possibly get your feasibility letter, get your will serve, or get your plan approved, and your lots platted, and come back for a will serve letter right after that. And I don't see where a lot of this is the district's problem, but I see that, you know, you're pleading that your case that you don't have those lots to be have the feasibility assessment or standby fee applied to.
I guess just based on what I'm used to, the feasibility, you know, when we go to final plat, obviously the final plat, we need the will serve. We also probably, or a lot of developers might come back and say, you know what, I'm not planning phase two for phase three, but we will request that we also get will serve letters for those, because we don't want to run the risk that someone else comes in and pays their fees and has those allocated. So I like the ability, I'm glad that you guys have implemented the ability for someone to pay those fees. I just don't think it should be a feasibility, I think it should be a will serve. And you know, in between those time frames, to your point, usually it's a very short period of time.
Yeah.
But because we don't have the capacity in our case, I mean, in our case, if the state doesn't say yes to our request, we literally will be sitting on this feasibility letter for the next year while we, you know, I think our plan B is we have to build the well as quickly as possible and the pump house, well, we've already drilled the well, in order to get that capacity and prove that it's there. Hopefully they say yes, and in short order we're up there with our final plat. But so then we're paying a fee for nothing from our perspective, you know, for the next year.
Can I ask why you went ahead and asked for the feasibility letters when you did?
I think part of it had to do with Greg, you know, and I can't speak to exact, that had to do with financing. So we had come in and we wanted to show something in the way of financing. Your recollection was correct. From my perspective, you need the feasibility letter because for the county to start the preliminary plat process, if they don't know that it's at least feasible, they won't start that process. Now, their next stop is at the final plat. They need the will serve. They need definitive water. And that's when, you know, that's kind of where we're at. And we can't give, actually, you guys have given us a will serve, I think. They know that it's not true. They know that the state won't sign off on it because the state knows that there's not capacity right now.
So it's not essentially, I guess what I'm hearing, Don, is I don't know if it's the district's fault that there isn't capacity available. It creates the problem, I think, for us and how we assess Summit, but the second source and Bloomington well had to be online before they would even allow us to move ahead with the will serve or for us to have the capacity, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, first of all, the things that you guys have implemented, we are thankful for, you know, I mean, the feasibility and everything else, I think that we've done maybe more so in the last year than prior years. We're really trying to work through this process and everything, understanding that we're in a situation where because of Pizzle going down and because of a lot of extenuating circumstances, we're in a position we don't want to be in. But I look at it this way. You absolutely could take that this is not a district problem, this is a developer problem. I'm not of that mindset. I think we've been trying to convey that to the degree we were not proponents, our current team is not proponents of doing our own district and renegading off on our own, right? We are in it with you guys. I also think that you're in it with us. We are probably, not probably, I think we're your biggest, you know, bill payer when we pay our bills, which we're trying to be more timely on. So we want to work with you guys through this process and understanding it's a relatively new process. And when I say that, tying the fee to the feasibility versus the will serve.
Yeah, I think that's where we're at, too. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. We want to make sure that relationship is good, because we understand the exact same thing, that we are tied with you because you are the biggest customer, but this whole process has to move along in a business-like way, in a way that makes sense for everybody. Otherwise, it'll go south and there'll be problems all around.
I do have a voice. So, you know, I've thought about this a lot. Obviously, I sit on both sides of the fence here, and I try to look at it as rationally and detached as I possibly can. So, Bob and I actually had a conversation about this, and I think one of the problems we have is that we implemented a process before we really understood what it would look like working through the process. And I totally understand what Blake is saying, is we don't want to start arbitrarily applying rules, because then that sets us up for future litigation. I think there is a pretty clear demarcation that we can make, irrespective of whether it's Summit or any other developer, that if they come in and, you know, purchase all the rights to Sundown and want to put in another 80 connections there, that we could apply that wouldn't be arbitrary, that addresses a lot of these concerns, that you've got people who are developing 1, 2, 3 lots that aren't bringing infrastructure to the table, that need the feasibility letter to process through the county's process, and it's going to be fairly quick and efficient because there isn't infrastructure development associated with it, that you could at that point, because the district is obligated at the point of feasibility to reserve capacity for that person, because we've issued a feasibility letter. For a larger developer that has to bring infrastructure to the table and is footing the bill for that infrastructure development, that could be your demarcation. Are they footing the bill for infrastructure development or not? You start charging the fees at will serve, because then you know it's actually likely that it's going to move forward. So that's kind of where my head is in this entire process, that it would be a logical and defensible approach. How that applies retroactively, I have no idea, because we've implemented, in my opinion, and I know we were all in debate about this entire thing, and I think we were kind of taking a shot in the dark because it was a foray into a new venture for us, but I think we have to also admit that we've probably made some mistakes in the creation of the process, and that's how I always operate, is that if there's a process problem, we go back and correct it. How that applies to retroactive fees, I don't know, and obviously I'd have to recuse myself from that, but that's just where my head lies.
I appreciate the discussion that's gone on here. I have a few more comments that I'll reserve for item H1. If there's no more things for you, Mr. Guerrero, you're welcome to stay with us here as we continue on. But unless there's any comments from any of the other trustees, we'll move on to item number F, like Foxtrot.
So Mike handed me a note, and Mike, you can't have discussion at this point. Where there would be a conflict of interest, if you have a conflict of interest, is when the board action actually takes place. If we're going to make a vote, and we have that down here in the manager's report portion, then both you and you would have to recuse yourself, obviously. So if you wanted to make your comment, because I think you're kind of finding yourself in a similar situation.
Yeah, I don't know if I want to call it a similar situation, or because I'm not really sure if Don's in the exact same predicament, but I can understand where you're coming from.
And would you like to comment? Trustee Moyle?
I don't know if I'd like to comment.
Okay. At this point. Okay. Respect that. Thank you. Again, is there any thank you for that heads up on that, Blake?
We're going to need to make sure that happens if we're going to make any kind of decision today. So.
Very good. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Mr. Hurst, welcome back.
All right. Well, thank you. It brings back memories when we start talking about that kind of stuff, and I could give you more historic perspective on that in context, but probably wouldn't be meaningful in the amount of time that we have. So
we appreciate history.
Okay, so what I've done is I've put together a couple of exhibits. And
you look good in your yellow, by the way, Paul.
Thank you.
Cheery, bright, sunny.
I tried to be, you know, depending on where you are in the Wasatch Front, it's either cheery or brighter. It's not. So what I'm handing to you, and I have this on a larger scale also, so I'll...
Second map coming, looks like the first.
There are two, yes. One is, if you look on the far right corner, you've got one of two, and then two of two in the title block there, so... And they're different colors, aren't they?
Why, they are different colors.
Yes. So, the reason I divided it and didn't put them together is that it started getting too busy and wanted to make you dizzy doing all of this. So the sheet one, exhibit number one, if you will, is the proposal that we've been talking about up until now, and that is coming up the canyon, replacing the existing line that's in whatever state it's in, with a new, as we've listed it right now, a 6-inch line going up to the existing pump house, the one that's black, you know, the black block one that's there, it says Powder Mountain on the side of it. That's the existing booster station. That was booster station number two. Salvage that building rather than knock it down and rebuild it. Put new guts in it, if I can use that phrase, new pumps, new controls, new services, and then boost the water from there using the existing 4-inch line that goes up to to the road, virtually, doesn't it? And then we need to build another booster station right there to push the water from there up to the existing 6-inch transmission line that's up behind those lodges right there. And that would be the interim, if you will, solution to most cost-effectively get water up to the into the system and be able to push it up to both Timberline and also over to Powder West and to service the existing customers that are in that particular area of the district. If you will, the original part of the district, I'll use that phrase. It doesn't take the water up to the Hidden Lake Reservoir at this point. We wouldn't be able to do that because of the elevation difference. You can see the price tag for that. Could it be cheaper? Could it be more? It's possible, but you know, we tried to give a number that would give you values that would be hopefully realistic. So that's the first option. Now, I heard also there has been discussion about are there alternate routes? And by the way, obviously, and this is something that I've heard some concern about, and that is, can we push water both ways? Can we have water come down, or can we push it up, you know, using the same line? Yes, you can. If you match pressures of the existing system with the new system, yes, and the customers won't see it any more than, let me give you this perspective. The Hidden Lake Reservoir has 16 feet of water in it. If that reservoir was to be empty, well, for every 2 feet that reservoir elevation, water elevation goes down, you lose a pound. So you lose 8 pounds of pressure in your system if that reservoir, the Hidden Lake Reservoir, is empty. You know, whether you like it or not, if it goes, you know, with that losing that, you lose 8 pounds. So a system, a normal system, does have booster pumps on it, and it's normal for those to, you know, you can see your house won't know the difference, shouldn't know the difference, and shouldn't see, you know, if there's a 10-pound or a 15-pound swing in pressure, it's not going to make a significant difference. You might be happier depending upon how low the pressure is in your house, but it's not going to make a significant difference to the function of your house. So what you do is you match the pressure at the point where you make the connection with the existing system and have the pumps meet that pressure, and then you really don't see that much fluctuation. So the water can go any direction, and you won't see that much difference. Let me take you, yes.
Is reservoir and tank synonymous here?
Yes, they
okay.
are.
Okay,
okay. Sorry.
No, I just want to make sure I understood.
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
Let me take you to sheet number two, if I may.
Page two.
Page two, please. I'm moving along quickly, and then I'll be glad to back up and talk to you. I used red to get you, catch your eye, catch your attention in terms of this is your psychology here. And what I'm showing you here, and what I'm trying to depict is as Roy and I have conferred with each other relative to where do we really want to go, and what would be the ultimate desired configuration for the system. The ultimate desired configuration for this district system would be get that water main that supplies water to all parts of the district in a public road, not have it run down a ski run and over the river and through the woods as it presently does. That would be the desired option in terms of the ultimate capital improvement for the district. Can they afford it? No, but nonetheless, that's where we ought to head, very frankly. That ought to be our goal, to get it that way. What this does, I'll explain this to you. We would, under the red scenario, we would replace the 4-inch line that we didn't replace under the blue scenario, so that we have a good line going up from the new well. Then we would also run along the road. You notice that the booster station that was shown under the blue is still there, called option one. And then we'd have to add another booster station about in the area of where that access road is to get us up to that the developer uses to get to his gravel pit area to get to his ski runs off the main road. We chose that location because there's a clearing there, and then push the water. And I've taken the liberty, Mr. Moyal, to push the water across Mr. Moyal's property, put the main in his proposed road, and then connect up to the newer line, the 10-inch line that comes off, that was constructed as a part of the reservoir when Hidden Lake Complex was built, and then salvage that much of the existing line up there close to ski patrol area and all of those particular areas. So that's the ultimate solution. Now the green and the yellow are our effort to try to understand and address what I was informed as some of the discussion between the trustees as to are there alternate alignments that can be considered. I call them the cross-country alignments. Now, the caution I give you relative to the cross-country alignments, and I think it's probably intuitive to you, if we start going cross-country, then, of course, you know, we all realize that our peak demand is in the winter, not in the summer. And hopefully there's lots of snow, because then the ski resort is happy and the developer's happy to have lots of snow and lots of patrons. It's going to be a real challenge to service those booster stations if they ever go down. Booster stations are, what should I say? They need a lot of attention, you know, and they can be problematic. So I caution you on that. I caution you also that we have not taken into account what it would cost to get power. We're talking up to 100 horsepower motors to run these pumps. To push the water up the hill.
What is a 100 horse capacity? What does it require?
Three phase power.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know it's expensive, isn't it? Especially when you're going cross country, if you don't have it relatively close, it's expensive to put that power in.
So this price, the 1.3, doesn't include the two booster stations.
It includes the booster stations, yes,
but not the power.
Not bringing power to them. I haven't ventured to even guess what that might be at this point, very frankly. I mean, I just wanted to throw this out, get your comments, get some direction. I'm going to suggest to you something that I mentioned to Roy. I'll take the liberty, Roy, if I may, mm-hmm. and that is relative to options. As you know, we're looking to make application to try to get another loan from the Division of Water Resources. Our most immediate deadline is, I'm going to say, second to third week of January to get that application in. That means we need to say, this is kind of what we want to do, and this is kind of what it's going to cost, because they need to know how much it's going to cost. So getting a sense from you as to what your preference might be, sorry to load heavy decisions on you during this Christmas season, but would be most helpful in making that application deadline. So I'm glad to answer questions, and it's nice to be here. Thank you.
So I got a question on the red line.
Yeah.
Where we're at, looking for these booster stations. Is there power already? I can't remember if there's power in that road or anywhere adjacent to it already. Do you guys know?
I don't remember whether there's three phase in
there.
We're
still going to have to get three phase to it anyway.
I think the three phase might actually run up one of our ski trails.
Okay.
Mike might know better than I do.
There's some on Lodge Trail and there's some along that road.
Yeah, I mean, it would be closer than the yellow option for sure, but I don't think there's three phase in that road. I think it's on Lodge Trail.
From my contact at Rocky Mountain, Craig
Bristol.
He said that I've got a box right on my property line on Lodge Trail. They could get it, and then I've got another one in Powder Ridge.
Yeah, and I think both those feeds go up Lodge Trail.
Yeah. Not the Powder Ridge one. Powder Ridge one goes up the highway. Summit Pass.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
And it's three phase?
Yeah.
And you know, is it 13-2 or what are they running up there?
I don't know.
Okay.
Do you want me to find out?
But it's anything's better than you.
Do you know the question to ask him? Craig Bristol, I'll call the UP.
Yeah, just ask it whether in Summit Pass we have three phase in that road. I mean, it's in close proximity, so I mean, you're talking about a 100-foot run at the longest to get to these stations rather than, you know, a couple thousand feet.
Probably the real big question on these other alternatives, yellow and green, cutting through Summit's property was easement. I mean, is that something that's worth even bringing up?
The
you have to cut ski
line,
trails.
Yeah.
It's going to cost you
$90,000.
Yeah. The yellow line I threw out as an alternative just because we had actually explored that for the fiber run. And obviously fiber is different because we don't have to have booster stations along there. But I thought it would be worth exploring because it's very easy digging. There's an existing access road on 90% of that. And I don't, you know.
On the green one?
On the yellow one.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would be speaking out of turn by saying I don't think we'd have a common granting a utility easement along that.
Along the yellow line?
Along the yellow line.
Is it possible to go common trench? Will they put the electrical line in the same trench? Because that's what they do in
a
lot of places.
Yeah, but it's electric and water is...
like dangerous.
No, I don't think that's I think it's 30-inch separation,
mm-hmm.
so you end up with they won't let you stack it in Utah.
Okay.
They have to go side by side,
uh-huh.
And I think it's 30-inch separation. So,
that's
so you'll end up with, like for the sidewall for electric, I think it's 18, so you'd end up with about a 4.5-foot wide trench. So it would be more economical than digging separate trenches.
Yeah, because where I'm from, the county has a meeting. Anytime say a utility, electrical utility, is doing a trench, they get everybody together and they use a common trench. They have a common trench meeting, so every contractor is not digging their own trench. Like I had one go behind my house, three different contractors tore up the land back there when they could have done a common trench.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was in Arizona, and they would have a common trench meeting, and the electrical utility, in most cases, would hold the meeting, and everybody that had, you know, an interest could use this common trench, and so they would only have to dig, and they would save a lot of money in the process.
Okay, I'm not totally familiar with trenching.
Yeah,
but
that would work.
Yeah,
that would work.
Craig
trustees, Craig didn't answer, but I've left him a message. And when he calls back, we'll ask that question. Yeah.
Maybe it's not doable.
No, I think it is. I think you just know, because we looked at it when we did the fiber run. Because we were trying to do gas, electric, and fiber, and then actually do a new sewer line and right. all that. And we looked at it, and we were going to end up with a 9-foot wide trench. Because in Pennsylvania, where I'm from, mm-hmm. they'll let you stack them vertically, too.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
So you actually
but you were doing a bore for a lot of your fiber, weren't you? Or were you
no,
trenching?
That's why we went up Wolf Creek Canyon. Really so,
okay, so you yeah. didn't have to bore.
So they actually just came in with a dozer, with a ripper on it. Right
I got
so,
it. Yeah. yeah.
So I'm going to ask you a question.
I didn't mean to get off.
Okay. Accessibility was the other question that Paul brought up, and accessing that. If actually a road is cut through that area and we keep it somewhat groomed, or you guys do, is it a ski trail? I mean, would people use that as a ski trail, or would you want to groom it for one?
I mean, we could groom it. It would be powder country access. I don't think that would be an issue that
I just know Kircher helps you. That's why
there, there's an existing road. I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's why I chose, you know, and it's not quite this alignment, but it's really close. Mm-hmm. When we were talking about it last time, there's an existing road for 90% of this.
Yeah. I mean, our guys, at some point, we're going to have a snowmobile. We can't go run the use of the ski resort snowmobiles all the time. So we're going to have our own equipment to get around.
Yeah.
So we'll figure that out somehow to get to wherever in the up there when everything's snowbound. We're going to have to get around and do things. So we're going to have to get whatever it takes to do that. So I'm okay with the accessibility, the powers, the cost we don't know about, but could be looked at in the common trench. A big question, I think, was the easement. We've got to be able to use it. If we feel like it's something that works, that's fine. If not, then we just need to know before we...
I've got some comments about trenching that I just remembered on an RV park we built within the last year. Trustees, I've got from Rocky Mountain Power, Craig Bristol on the line,
Hello, gentlemen.
So the question for Mr. Bristol is?
Yes.
Who can ask that question?
What was the question about the
common trench? What power is actually, two questions. Mm-hmm. Well, first one is, what power is actually in Summit Pass Road? So running from Timberline Lodge up to the new development.
We have three-phase. It's 7,200 volts, so there's 12,470 volts there.
Yeah.
You have a, maybe it's the pump. Isn't there a pump by Hidden Lake? Is that your pump?
Yes.
Yep.
And you're adding another pump there, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That transformer that feeds the existing pump, that's a three-phase transformer. And instead of adding another transformer there, I think there's enough ampacity on that existing transformer to feed that new pump as well. So you don't have to, you know, worry about another transformer up there.
It's not that
hard. That.
So what we're talking about is
okay, Craig, another question.
We're talking about having a new pump house and a pump and booster pumps coming off of the highway.
Yes.
And then pushing water up the hillside, so we need to have power run from the road up or from the top back down, separate from these two pumps stations up on top?
We have right now, without any other loads coming on from, you know, the Summit or from Powder Mountain, the homes and everything, we have enough ampacity to probably help you out right now. So.
Oh, good.
You just drilled a new well going up the road, is that correct?
That's the one that we'll need the pump on and the pump house, as well as the booster pumps going right up the side of the mountain from there.
Okay, there is right now, and I believe it kind of got buried, there is a transformer of ours that's already there. Mm-hmm. It was damaged right on the onset by, I believe it was Boart Company, so that transformer needs to be replaced, and it probably needs to be replaced anyway. So when you're ready for power there, probably be anytime next spring, is that correct?
It's something somewhere around in there.
Okay, I guess once the snow melts, you'll be wanting power there, so then we can just, I'll have you submit a request for service there, and then we'll, you know, size it, have you fill out a load sheet, size the transformer, and get a transformer ordered, and, you know, probably meet with your electricians or electrical engineers and, you know, determine what size transformer will be needed for that new well.
Great, Craig. Trustees, any other questions for Mr. Bristol? Mike, anything?
No, as long as it doesn't affect my division.
And you're satisfied with that?
Yeah, we're good.
Great, you guys, you're satisfied with that. Yeah. Craig?
Is he comfortable with laying it in the same trench then? I mean, that's...
Oh, yeah. Oh, let's ask that question.
I think it's 3 feet.
I think it is, too. Mm-hmm. We're talking about trenching. Just as far as laying things in the same trench, what's the specific question?
So we want to lay the power and the water in the same trench.
I don't think he can.
We won't do that.
3 feet? Yeah, no. It's, what is
water,
it?
Water and electricity does not make it at all.
Yeah, and I was going to say that on our RV. That goes.
There are some exceptions. If they're side by side, there's going to be, a minimum of a 4 foot clearance.
48.
I would have to speak with my electrical engineer. We'd rather not be in the same trench. They're just, it's the same reason we don't, we're not in the same trench as natural gas either.
Yeah. I remember
gas,
that too.
Power don't mix at all. So, there might be an exception there. I know you probably need to cross a road or something. Is that what you're looking at?
Well, just in general, I think we're asking the question, but your answer, I think, it was where we needed to be. I'm remembering that.
Too. Spacing, Jim, for sure.
Yeah.
Little notes for new, unrelated service. It's not along a road.
It would be for new, unrelated service.
Where there's nothing.
Where there's nothing.
Up a hillside.
Up a hillside, or it's going to go, it's just going to go over the river and through the woods.
Okay. We just would need to sit down and come up with a plan of where you'd want to run it. I mean, we do have facilities along the road, going up the road. We have what we call sectionalizing cabinets, where we can, it's like a junction box in your home, where we can tap off three phase and take it in a different direction. Or if there's, say, your transformer that's going to go in for that new well, we could actually come out of that with three-phase power as well. We call that a loop feed, and we could come out of that as well. So, there's various options that we can look at to supply another location.
Awesome.
I got one other question.
One last question.
Who would install your power? Is that you or your subcontractor, or is that us?
We would have, you'd be required to install all the trench and the conduit and the pole rope that's inside the conduit. Then we would come in, we would pull the new wire or conductor, set the transformers, run service wires over to the meter base and set the, so you do all the trench work and all the conduit.
Okay.
Got it. Craig, appreciate you, friend. Really do. Good luck to you. I see your kids at the lot, so you're a good kid.
It's because of the earthquake.
You too, friend. Thanks for calling me now. Yeah. All right. See you. All right, bye-bye. Well, there you go. He's one of the senior in that area, Mike. He's a senior guy for Rocky Mountain Power. So only it's just him, and then right to Ready Kilowatt. That's the next guy. So you could only want that.
So we wouldn't have to run clear to the top of the mountain. We just hit those two, come from the bottom. It sounds like how that transformer hit those two booster stations coming up, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have to run all the way clear up.
Kind of like the Pillsbury Doughboy. Uh-huh. He was there the line gone years
ago. Okay.
So anyway.
We were running, I just pulled some quotes when we put in Village and Mary's lift to run three phase to those, and including switch gear, we were about $34 a foot for a 3,000 foot run, so.
That sounds late. That sounds very light.
That's what we ended up at. Oh. I mean, this is the actual bid.
How long was this?
This was 16, late 16. December 16.
Yeah, that went up.
Yeah, so.
Okay, any more questions? Mr. Hurst, any more things to... So you need some ideas, don't you?
Yeah, it would be helpful if we want to make that deadline. Otherwise, we're pushed off for the quarter.
What I'd like to do is, trustees, is to give Mr. Hurst a little clearer idea so he can press forward with what he would like to do. Starting with, trustees, is there one of these three, yellow, red, and green, that we can eliminate?
Red's out. Blue. It's blue, green, or yellow.
Trustees, please excuse me for being, I'm colorblind. I'll go to blue, green, or yellow.
Yes.
I would make the recommendation that you explore blue and yellow because green doesn't significantly improve our current situation because we're still taking it to existing holding tanks, don't get it any higher on the mountain than it is. So we're not making the water more usable. So I would look at blue and yellow would be my suggestion.
Any other comments?
And on yellow, is your experience being up on the mountain, is it even doable coming down to a rock formation you have to fight through or anything? Is it a
relatively
doable course?
Easy digging. We went through with Fugle, who was doing the installation for CenturyLink, and they actually liked the soil, they liked the digging. They weren't able to come through with a D9 with a ripper hook on it and just feed flexible conduit straight into it, just because of some of the, they would have had to do significant bench cutting to do it. But you could definitely come through, you know, with a mini X and put in it. What's your frost free depth? 48 inches,
yeah,
there?
Probably
so,
at least,
I mean,
yeah.
You can put a 4 foot trench with a mini X. It was pretty easy digging through there. So.
Blue requires you to go both ways on the water, right?
Pressure regulators,
going up and back?
No, we'll work okay with what we have on the system. So, no, blue just requires going up, if that's your question.
Mm-hmm.
It's only from the well up to the distribution system. Up.
But you're moving water both ways, right, in that same line?
In the black line, we're
right.
Moving water both ways, yes.
But if you go with the yellow route, you're going to the top of the hill. You're going to a reservoir, and then you have natural pressure to service everyone.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
My only other comment on the yellow line would be, and again, this would require another easement on our part as Powder Mountain, but maybe explore putting... Because the problem with this reservoir is I believe you're actually on Weber State's property there.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
So, and I don't think you're going to get an easement. So you might want to come to the other side of the Hidden Lake parking lot. So right now where you are on this
sure.
side of Hidden, yeah. So.
Yeah, illustrative only.
Yep, yep.
Weber State?
Yeah, the Bill Babes gave them like 2 acres there.
Did they really?
Build an right. observatory they never planned to build. So.
Can't beat Doc.
So,
I was all for the yellow, and then I started thinking about the accessibility, and then I think the electrical kind of put me over the edge. I think if we went with the blue and the red, it would like add more convertibility if we needed to tap into it or service it in the middle of wintertime. I don't think just a groomed run is going to access it, because if there's an emergency and we need to access it, it's not only accessing it with a groomer or a mini X, you need access with some big equipment, move a lot of material.
Yep.
And if you take one of those pumps out, you gotta haul that baby up there, it isn't light.
Yep. Yeah.
It's true.
Yep.
So with that,
I mean, just to kind of piggyback on that, I mean, you're looking at another $1 million
yeah.
for $100,000 you could get a service cat with a crane on it,
yeah.
And a deck that's large enough to haul a pump. I mean, they, you know, they're out there. You can get them on the used market in good shape for $100,000 because most snowmaking systems have, you know, 150 to 350 horsepower pumps. situated mid-mountain that they have to service mid-season to. So.
But wasn't the purpose of getting it up there to, maybe I might be wrong on this, but wasn't the purpose of trying to get it up there so that we could get on the same page with Summit so that we're not using their water as homeowners up there, and this other longer, more expensive route could be done incrementally, didn't it? Mm-hmm.
The appeal to bringing it up on top is that then we don't have a segregated system, which I get, I subscribe to, you know, in terms of move all the reservoirs up to the highest location, get the water up to the highest location, and distribute it from there. You know, that's neat and clean in that regard. This other one is more cost effective. You know, it's a question of what the district can afford to pay back, and what the lending agency will loan you. You know,
wasn't there a time where Powder Mountain was suggesting putting a tank at the top of Lightning Ridge?
Oh, I don't know anything about that. Yeah.
Where's that? Lightning Ridge.
Up behind Powder Mountain West, that ridge right behind Powder Mountain West.
Oh, right there.
I thought I heard that from somebody in the know that was like, and this longer, more expensive route would allow for something like that if it was still an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why we would.
I think it was when you guys were proposing the boutique hotel and you were trying to figure out how to get pressure up to the saddle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a Western America holding dream of having the hotel up there, and I think Greg kind of latched onto that early on, but I think I haven't heard anything about it since maybe the first month I was here.
Okay. So. Does this single reservoir or tank, is it going to service everyone? Are there no more reservoirs or tanks planned?
There needs to be more. We'd have, of course, Hidden Lake is already there.
Right.
And then we would add the new one, and that would be capacity for the old area of the district, as well as for anybody up on top, so we could service both of them. And then our hopes, I think long term, is to add another one somewhere over by
one or two more.
Hidden Lake or someplace, yeah.
Move it to the south.
Yeah.
Over
by Coppercrest or in that area, right?
We got one planned down Overlook? In the village area and potentially one all the way out if we ever get out that far.
Or maybe two more.
And whose land is that going to be on?
It would be on Summit's.
So let's, trustees, I'd like to entertain them. I'd like to have a motion that we accept two of the three and eliminate one right now so we can start dialing this down. Would one of you like to make a motion?
Long shot.
Okay.
I'll make a motion.
Please. I would make a motion that we explore the yellow route and the blue route.
The yellow route and the blue route. There's a motion to explore the yellow route and the blue route as given to us on our maps. And there's a second. I'm not going to call for any more discussion. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Okay. We have one nay. Thank you very much. With that information, Mr. Hurst, would you be able to, with that information, do you have to have one, or can you present those options to move forward?
Mr. Chairman, here's what I will suggest. We will put, now that I've received some good information on the electrical, I'll add that cost to it, and we'll throw that out there, and as we talk to the loaning people, that it would include Zions Financial, we'll look at both of these, and then depending upon what we can afford, if I can express it that bluntly, we'll put one forward, we'll let you know. How's that?
Very good. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Like to move on to our attorney, Mr. Hamilton.
Yeah, I think everything that I really had to discuss needs to be discussed.
In closed session? Very good.
With that being said, you'll acquiesce.
I'll acquiesce.
To later, and then we'll go to our manager.
Okay.
Bob, are you okay? I was going to say either one. Let's move on to item number H1, which is a discussion and or action on the Summit Liens, Phase 2 standby fees, agreement for reimbursement on Summit's professional services for developmental agreement, and the PRUD agreement and agreement on sewer 30 connections by Western American Holdings. Mr. Watts.
So if we can probably split those up as basically on the way they're presented, dealing with the standby fees that Summit feels that they do owe and how those are repaid, we're going to have to come up with some type of a payment option or a plan or something. Is that what you're suggesting, Don? And then you have the other pieces that are it's a whole nother deal based on the feasibility letter. That's separate from the standby fees that you feel like you're obligated to.
The top section, we're prepared to pay by the end of the year.
Okay. So with that, I think we're okay on that. And then,
I guess the ask up there is, does the lien fee, the $10,000 lien fee, apply or not?
You're going to discuss all the fees.
Then we have to decide if you want to take the liens fees off. That's what you're requesting, is having them removed.
We're going to go down these one at a time, then.
Mm-hmm.
Lien fees of $98.40. Am I reading that correctly?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, trustees, any discussion?
What's that?
On the lien fees. That's the first one, as it says, Summit's liens. Trustees, would you like to?
I do have a question on that.
Okay.
Did the district actually incur the lien fee cost?
Some of it, yes.
Done.
Do we know how much?
That is the amount, isn't it?
Okay. The lien fees that are put on are, it's state standard, $120.
Mm-hmm.
The liens were put on, and per our conversation with Don, I went and released the liens. Yes, there are charges to release them. So, that being said, the fees that were paid to release them, automatically, I'm going to have to request. But it's going to be that dollar amount, whether we dismiss the entire thing or just what I had to pay to release them. So, that's where we stand.
So, just to be clear, the district's costs would be covered irrespective of whether this is waived or not. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I have a small statement. I want to say I respect the presentation that was given to us earlier today. Mr. Guerrero, thank you.
Thank you.
Independent of every other trustee on this board, my feeling with regards to that developer and group at the top of the hill has significantly changed or softened in the last year. A lot of that has to do with you,
mm-hmm.
Mark. I don't know you well, I don't know you. You got really nice hair.
Mark is all the equivalent.
Well, no, but notwithstanding, you know, there's a little saying from where I come from, and this applies, as far as I'm concerned, with the other two that used to be here more than a year ago. You poke a rabbit long enough and he'll bite you. Where I am on this, so all trustees know on that, is that from a district standpoint, the players back then, though, I'm trying to make a responsible decision for the district. I love the development at the top of the mountain. I learned to ski there. I ride a dirt bike. I like trails and mountain bikes. There's no reason for me not to. I really like what's going on up there.
But this district, I think admittedly, we made some financial decisions based on when CRS and Mr. Hurst were acting as our manager, and they brought along with them qualified staff. We made decisions at that point to hire a full-time manager, to then move qualified staff into our employment. We got office space. We continued with a person to do service work up there for our district. We've purchased some capital. We've incurred some expense based on the money we felt like was coming, and that had to do with based on will serve letters from promising companies. So I still have the promise, but I have fundamentally, for me, trustees, this district has done what they said they were going to do. The state ombudsman has ruled that we have to pay these, or we have to charge these fees when we do certain things. We've done what we said we were going to do. We entered into an agreement. There's all kinds of paper everywhere. But for me, you enter into an agreement, you make the agreement, and there can, well, we didn't talk about this, and well, we didn't talk about this. The fact is, though, we made an agreement. I'm of the mind that when you make an agreement, the guy across, if you make it with the guy across the table, he needs to keep that part of the agreement. Were we absolutely correct in everything we did? Oh, maybe not so. Were they absolutely correct in everything they did? Maybe not so. But the fact of the matter is we've made an agreement. My other concern is, and I respect the fact, it's been an incredible privilege to be on the learning end of what it takes to build a community. Is with that's basically what they're doing up there on the hill. Everything, it's amazing to me the amount of funding. But at the time we made the decision to do what we did, I feel a little, I'm a little conflicted right now. Well, I want to help. I understand what the presentation was to us trustees earlier. I also want to have the money in the bank. So I'm also admittedly a little clouded. You know, I'll say it a little plainly. But sometimes when you've got to go to the bathroom, you can't think clearly about other things. And right now we're waiting on the first payment before we can think clearly on the rest. And the urge to pee is great. And so until I get the, there's a lot of money out there. To me, this is a lot of money. And so I don't know that I can make the best decision till I use the restroom, so to speak. And I'm kind of hoping that Summit will relieve that initial pressure rather quickly to do that. So I have some feelings about that, and hopefully you could understand my little third grade potty mouth thing, but I'm just trying to speak simple and plain facts, and I would appreciate any other comments from trustees. Otherwise, I'm going to call for a motion. We can go through these point by point by point, and they're all well represented and well heard, well established, and they have some, but before I ask for Trustee Moyal, Trustee Scrotel to
accuse themselves.
Thank you, Blake. I'm inviting for comment.
I'm ready to comment.
Okay, Mike, or so, Trustee Moyal.
So I've made that payment. I haven't withheld the payment, but I have voiced some concerns about it. So at first I didn't understand it, and then I came to understand it, and I see the district grow, and I felt everything was fine until right recently, where I'm at a standstill because of the capacity letter. And it's a gray area that the state is supposed to issue it, then they're no longer issuing it. So it's entirely a district issue. So right now I'm feeling that it should be on hold for me, and I'm a much much smaller fish than Summit for a matter of months until, because it could be an indefinite, and they are non-existent. My 11 lots are non-existent right now. Can't sell them, and I can't market them legally. I can get creative in trying to sell home site credits like other people have done in the past, but I can't legally sell an item that's not, it's not a parcel number, it's not a recognized parcel, it's nothing. It's nothing but a future thing. So I don't mind having paid up till now, and I can't be put on an agenda. That's pretty much where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how long it's going to take. I was hoping it would happen before fall, and now we're waiting till spring. I'm ready to break ground on my infrastructure, not knowing if it's actually going to happen. And it's another one of those infrastructures that will be signed over to the district as soon as it's done. But I don't want to tie in until I have legal lots. So I agree with everything Mr. Harvey said, except for the bathroom break part.
Trustee Wilson, would you care to weigh in?
I really don't know enough about it yet. And I feel like I'm in a firefight here, and I don't have a lot of ammunition. So I think I'm going to listen to what Bob says a little bit.
Let's hope he chimes in. Trustee Scrotell, I'll go to you next, and then Trustee Barrett, if you'd be willing. I don't know. I'm just calling on everybody in the room. Trustee Scrotell?
I think I've said my part earlier, so I don't have anything else to add.
Thank you. Trustee Barrett?
I agree with Mark Schertel's comment. Essentially, if you look at developers within our district, there are differences between various developers. Summit is a big developer. They've brought infrastructure and the sole source capacity to our district at this time. Now, there's been issues related to timeliness in terms of developing additional sources. We could constantly look in the rearview mirror on a myriad of issues as a district, but I think it's pointless. Where I'm landing on this is when Summit becomes up to date on their current agreed upon responsibilities, in other words, every penny that is agreed upon, when they're current on that, I think between now and then we should have refined our policies with a significant level of robustness and attention to identifying differences between the developers. I mean, they run the gamut from existing homes that are connected to lots that are still owned by the developers to unplotted lots that various developers own and are stuck with. So I think we need to go back to the drawing board with our development policy, basically. It's not working for us, in case anybody hasn't figured that out right now. And in the meantime, I'd like to have Summit come current on their obligations. I'd like to have the current connection fees that are being assessed continue to be applied until a time certain deadline for the district to put together revised policies. Bring it to the board, let's have thoughtful discussions, and move forward at that point. That's where I'm sort of landing. And in the meantime, not to steal anybody's thunder, but let's push the ready, set, go button on this source reduction scheme that we need to get done yesterday. I want a commitment from Summit to immediately begin to finalize their responsibilities for Cache County mitigation plans. That's killing us. And let's just everybody put their shoulders to the grindstone. But there are differences between developers. There's developers that have bought and brought source capacity and infrastructure, and there are other developers that are multi-lot owners. And there's differences, and I think we need to recognize that and go back to the drawing board on our policy. That's all I can say.
Would that, Trustee Barron, would that include if we change our policy? I guess we could discuss it at the time, but based on what you've just said, would that include the possibility of a refund if we've charged an error?
I don't know. I can't get the past the validity of a lot of the stuff Don said and brought to us as it relates to the will serve letter history, the lack of validity therein at this point, the hoo-ha that accompanied that, where we are with these feasibility letters, the simple fact that Summit is providing 100% of the water in our district currently, including districts for the existing owners. I mean, I can't get past that. I think we need to make a thoughtful response in this. And if it means tabling decisions, that's fine. But we've got to start working together on cost containment issues with our consultants. I'm sitting here listening to this pick a color conversation and thinking to myself, this is where we get multiple engineering firms involved to get all the pertinent data sets together and help us understand what our options are. It's not up to me to pick a color. I mean, for crying out loud, I don't know enough about it. I know what color it is, but we need more information. This shouldn't be the board's responsibility to press the start button on identifying waterline engineering or water rights conversations and finalizing mitigation conversations and dealing with this stuff. It's frustrating. I can understand Mike Moyau's frustration. I can understand Don's frustration. And I understand the functioning of our organization as it relates to our need to maintain cash flow and the deals that you described, Jim. I don't have a good answer. I'm just throwing stuff out. Yeah.
Can I ask a question about when you say for Summit to get current on their current obligations or the obligations that are agreed upon? Are you saying the 70,000 or the 170,000? I guess to rephrase it, are you saying the stuff that is not in dispute at this point or the full balance?
The stuff that's not in dispute at this point.
So the 77,000.
That's just, I need to hear from Roy. We need to hear, like right now. Roy, what do you think about this? I mean, what do we need to do?
Yeah, no doubt about it. The stuff that's not being disputed needs to be paid to get the district current.
Okay.
Couple of other items on this whole list that need to be resolved. The other one is the Western American Holdings. What do we do with that so we can quit chasing that thing around? As far as Bobcat and Overlook goes, that's something we're just gonna have to work through on those policies and our process, like you said. The consulting fees, I think that's something that possibly Don and I, just like he talked about, we could work out. We could decide what projects we're working on, what inspections are being done and figure out how that's going to be funded or paid and come back to the board with some process that we agree on so that we have a business process going forward so we can talk to each other and feel comfortable in our business relationship. I think that's easy enough to do. So I think I'm comfortable with everything as long as the board can deal with this Western American Holdings. We do have an agreement, or Don wants to modify that, maybe bring it back to the next meeting. But that one, we ought to resolve that somehow so it doesn't just sit there and linger.
Sure, yeah.
But you want to keep the taps still?
No,
you don't care?
You don't?
No, we don't. And if we had understood the situation,
you wouldn't have
said we wanted that.
Well, that agreement that Ann did with the revision in there is the agreement we have. If he wants to sign it, or we can bring it back, one of the two.
Yeah, and so what do we do? Is that one that we need to have the board approve? We've got an agreement that was prepared by Ann Winston, Summit's attorney.
Oh, Ann did. Don't want you to confirm me. Ann actually.
Prepared
so
and gave it back.
I don't need her to review it.
No, it's her preparation. We had Blake look at it. So
okay,
this is when
Blake prepared that.
He prepared the original one, but Ann did the revisions.
Okay, so I prepared. I was asked to do an agreement. I put it together. Ann did revisions. I reviewed the revisions. We're good. I'm good with the revisions.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it would just need to be approved and signed.
Have you seen the revisions that Ann did?
I've got a copy of it here,
okay.
And I intended to ask Ann to review it. I didn't realize that she had worked with you, Blake, to get it done.
Well, so she didn't work with me. She sent it to Carrie.
And I forwarded
it to me.
Okay.
But I adopted all of her revisions, so I accepted all of her revisions. So.
Okay.
Then it's the same one you have that Ann gave you.
Yeah, then we're ready to execute that.
So all we need is the board's authorization to move ahead and get that finalized and eliminate those 30 connections, sewer connections by agreement.
Out of respect for Trustee Barrett,
because he's not in the room, would you then, he asked you a question, Mr. Watts, would you then state, because I'm going to, hold on just a second, outside discussion. I'm going to need to, under the circumstance with abstaining, I'm going to need Trustee Berendt to make the motion here. So at minimum would be the least we could do to respect him where he's at.
So
let me make sure, because we talked about it. Yeah, talked about it here. No, this one is
Horizon.
Yeah, this, it talked about the past payments either being paid or not paid, and I can't remember.
Yeah, just a second, Bob will take a quick look at this.
Transfer, sewer connection, payment of the outstanding fees, no additional fees, which we haven't accrued, someone agrees to pay. Okay, so it does say in here before you do that, that the outstanding ones that are here, are you agreeing to pay those or not? You don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, our position is when we stop
paying. When they
stop
paying. Okay, so that would be the only revision that had to be made if we agreed to do that.
Yeah. So just a moment. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but I don't remember seeing this in my packet, that agreement. It's there, Carrie?
It should be.
I'm sorry, I didn't review it. Bob, have you seen the agreement that they're referring to?
So it's the agreement to return the sewer connections?
Yeah. And honestly, I didn't review it in a lot of detail coming into your meeting.
That was the only thing that I wanted to make clear.
Do you want to change that and come back in the next meeting, or is it something we can let you, the board allows to move ahead on and resolve with our attorneys?
I'm going to be comfortable really on this particular, on that specific item, based on the counsel that we get based on the motion. So if you could state, because again, out of respect for Trustee Berendt, I'd like to state where you think we need to be or could be. Bob, do you want to give any discussion there?
No, I'm comfortable letting Roy identify the specifics. I'm not familiar with the financial machinations. I'm really not familiar at all with these sewer connections.
Can I ask one thing, though?
Mr. Wilson?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, you asked for the $6,500 to come back to you if those are ever, and if you give them up, you give them up. Why should we come back and give you the $6,500?
Well, and if I could speak, I mean,
go ahead.
My understanding of the two things is that they're bifurcated. One is the actual tap fee, and then the other is our ability to maintain that for ours. So what we wanted to tie in, when I say we, Western American Holdings, wanted to fix their tap fee, $6,500, so that if it becomes $12,000 down the road, they don't have to pay it, $6,500. That's the asset that we took. In addition to that, you have the right to reserve that on an ongoing basis, and you have to pay that. I mean, if you've got those fees, otherwise the district can take those taps and reassign them. So to reserve those for you, that's where the monthly fee comes in. So once we stop paying that, you guys have every right to go and resell those on the open market. But because we had originally paid for the underlying tap fee, now it turns out that the fee is about, well, Carrie said that it's gone up. I thought it was still $6,500.
It went up.
I'll tell you, that is not something we're going to fall on our sword over, is the underlying, you know, to me, the bigger deal is we've been paying monthly for years for that. So the 14 grand that's out there is the last few months that we're just kind of like, okay, now that we're kind of understanding what we've been paying for, shame on us, we should have understood it a long time ago. But no, there's not value there. And I think it's because we've been dialoguing way more than we did in the past, but so we're not looking and saying, hey, we've been reserving those for months and months and months for no value. We're not asking for that money back. What we're saying is, if you take those and if you sell them and someone else pays for them, then we should get recouped for the original capital investment.
With all due respect here, I'm going to speak up.
Yep.
Unfortunately, because of the past, in the last 6-12 months, I'll state it again, I've got a different feeling.
Yeah.
But in the months previous to that, you've taught me how to treat you. I've been very careful there. You taught me how to treat you. And I need, for me, still today, I need that agreement signed and executed before I would be willing to take action on this particular item. But if you guys are saying what you're saying, and you guys sign and execute that agreement, I don't have a problem with moving ahead with based on what you said. I think it sounds good. But unfortunately, I still got this memory.
Understood.
So if that's where we're at. So if we could make a motion, get this moving on. We're, with all due respect, we're 8 minutes to five, and we're only on item one on the manager's report.
It was going to be long.
We need to move. We need to move forward. So Bob, if you could make a motion, please.
I'm befuddled, I'll be honest with you. Very, I would defer to Roy or Mark Chertel.
Okay.
You, Mark can't do anything.
Mark can't.
We could update the agreement, too, to reflect what we just discussed.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you, since the discussion is, everything's changing on the agreement, we probably ought to modify it with some of this discussion and still bring it back to the board.
Very good.
That seems, I think that's the best.
Okay, so.
Yeah, the $77,880 needs to be paid, but this.
And that's what we're more than willing. Well, again, I wanted to talk through. I never really talked through our finances. We are prepared to pay the $42,703. And Carrie, if you've incurred fees in releasing them, so that 42 has to go up. I was a little confused as to whether you did or not. If you did, we can enroll that amount into that as well. The 35, we understand that that's our obligation. And if we could work offline with the timing, we're not in a position where we could write that check probably between now and the end of the year. But hopefully shortly thereafter, and we do recognize that that's our obligation and we're willing to pay it as soon as we can cash flow it. So the 77 plus whatever fees you've incurred releasing the liens, we are, you know, willing to pay in a very timely manner.
I'm going to be a little more bold, Bob, because you said you're befuddled. Go ahead.
I'm conflicted. I'm still conflicted. I believe that we do need to revise our policies. Take into account the points that Don Guerra has made today as it relates to these connection fees and be more consistently apply those. But I do believe that they need to pony up for those monies that are agreed to, and we need a time certain time frame where we're going to come to an agreement, get back to the board on resolution of these other disputed areas. I want, you know, the next board meeting, I want to fully understand where the disputes lie and what we need to do.
Yeah, and we can do that, Bob. Because they've agreed to pay, for the most part, pay most of those fees, and then we come back to the, with anything outstanding with the board, plus we'll resolve these American Holdings issue and modify the agreement if we need to.
What's the balance today, Carrie, without these things we're discussing?
Right now, and he doesn't have the updated with the December on there. You're talking 63.9 and another 17 for. So right now it shows 80,000. That's not including Bobcat, but that still has all the fees incurred in there. So
77 is pretty
right.
Close.
It's pretty close. Okay.
You know that. Let me. I'm going to help this out a little bit. The chair would recognize any motion that could be made, especially if it were around $80,000 fee being made, and then the rest of these items being tabled until we take care of, modify, or get some more information going. Mr. Hamilton, is that fairly close?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a number here, 77,000, that's undisputed. I think that should be paid. The agreement has already been drafted by me, revised by their attorney, accepted the changes, but if they need to review it with their attorney, understood.
With all due respect, and I love that too, but it used to be. Okay, now we've got that. We went ahead and done something formally, but all of a sudden I got dealt another contract with just a couple of more changes in the past. It always came back changed. We'd go ahead and do something, and then all of a sudden.
But that doesn't have anything to do with the 77,000 that's owed.
I'm hung up. Sorry, admittedly, I'm hung up. I'm just a normal, stupid rockhead man. So,
I mean, summarizing, you know, we could pay the 42 and whatever the additional fees are by the end of the week. I mean, we'll get that check paid. We'll give you a timetable for paying the balance of the 77. We'll revise that agreement. I mean, my ask and what I'm hoping for is that we don't go back and ask for any of the fees that we already paid on those. But we wipe clean the 14.
We're not going to commit to that right now. I know that's your ask.
Okay.
We're looking at $77,000, and a timetable is not an equal payment over the next 120 months for me.
Understood.
No, I get that.
Yeah.
But again,
I know.
It's been, I'm sorry, and it wasn't you, and it wasn't Mark, but it's just I'm so let's go back to Bob, you've been hearing the discussion. There's nothing more on paper that we're looking at. Do you have a feel for motion you'd like to make?
I move that we accept the agreed upon $77,000 as payment in full for services that have been agreed upon. I move that within 30 calendar days we meet and obtain a consensus on these other charges that are disputed, and that a report be submitted to the board for its review on these disputed charges. And I move in the meantime our connection fees for all lots within the district continue to be charged.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second. It's not a roll call vote, but just for hearing. Trustee Scrotel.
I recuse myself from this vote.
Trustee Moyal.
I recuse myself.
Very good. Trustee Barrett.
Aye.
Trustee Wilson.
Aye.
Trustee Harvey. Aye. 3-2. That's a majority. That motion passes. We'll move on. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to item number 2 under the manager's report. A short break.